Welcome to another episode of Profiles of Leadership Interview Series. I'm Steve Anderson, your host, and I want to thank VGM Advantage for sponsoring this series. I have a great guest today, Dan Rutenberg, and Dan is the CEO of Spear Physical Therapy in New York City and is the 2016 winner of the Jane L. Snyder Practice of the Year Award. This year, Major League Baseball sent Dan to Seoul, Korea, and subsequently Tokyo as the physical therapist and strength conditioning specialist in this world's World Baseball Classic. Dan has played pro baseball on three continents and is passionate about developing the next generation of leaders in the PT profession. Dan, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So fill us in a little bit about just kind of your journey, you know, where you grew up, and I'd love to hear a little bit about your baseball career too.
Absolutely. So I grew up in Brooklyn, and for some reason, just from a very young age, I had a passion for playing baseball. My parents did not know anything about baseball. They weren't athletes in that sense, and I think that made all of it beyond me, all that intrinsic motivation. My dad did not push me at all. As a matter of fact, he thought the pitcher and hitter were on the same team and was confused why he wasn't throwing the ball over the plate. So that was his level of ignorance.
He had a ways to go there.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think that actually was an advantage for me because all the desire was for me. Subsequently, you know, I really was my dream to play professionally, and having had that chance was an incredible end to the journey. But just like in everything, it's the journey that matters, right? It's not where you ended up. And so my whole baseball story is very much linked to starting a physical therapy practice 2 years out of school, and having the same sort of drive. And I learned how to set goals in baseball. Like, I look at my notes, be all conference, hit over 300, you know, whatever it was. And it just taught me how to write down my goals.
Be a goal setter.
Them.
Yeah. So back up to baseball again. So did you go to college, or did you go right out of high school into pro ball?
No, I went to college. I was not, any prized prospect. I played in high school. I went to college in Binghamton, which at that time was a Division III school. And I graduated in 94, the year of the strike. The 1 year that if you didn't get drafted, you couldn't get signed as a free agent.
Yeah.
And I had a tryout with the Phillies that went really well.
Timing is everything.
Yeah, we spoke after, and his hands were tied.
Yeah.
Subsequently, I ended up playing in independent leagues.
Okay.
And I played for about a decade in Europe. So I would go and play in Switzerland, in Italy, Germany. And then in 2007, there was a professional league in Israel that I played in.
Oh, wow.
And so it's been, baseball has taken me all over the world. If I was Derek Jeter, believe me, I would have been, you know, I would have had a better baseball story. But the baseball story for me was just so relevant to how the rest of my life has unfolded. Because that struggle is a fun struggle, and it taught me a lot.
What position?
Played center field in college. I was a lefty, so.
Okay, less left fielder, or lefty center fielder.
Yeah.
Okay, and good hitter, I would presume.
Yeah, that was the one thing that came very natural. You know, we talk about strength-based leadership in our company a lot, and that was the one thing that just from a very young age, I could just hit the ball hard, hit 407 my senior year. That was the easy part for me.
Yeah.
The harder part was just learning how to be a great outfielder, and you know, some of the other aspects that were sort of initially weaknesses that I tried to shore up.
Yeah, that's a great story. I'm really intrigued. I don't know, you probably don't know this, but my dad was a professional baseball player.
Is that
and,
right?
And he actually played in the Yankee organization.
Wow.
And he went to spring training 1 year in Florida. Mm-hmm. Casey Stengel was the manager, and he played on a team with Mickey Mantle, Don Larson, Yogi Berra, Tony Kubek. I mean, it was just Mickey Mantle. It was a great, great experience, but he was a catcher. And there was Yogi Berra and Thurston Howard in front of him, so he played a lot in the farm leagues too. But he played for the Binghamton Triplets 1 year, and he played a couple years in some other leagues too. So
right. Now that's a Mets farm team.
Yeah, interesting.
Wow, great story.
So what did you, so you described a little bit. So in baseball, you learned how to be a goal setter. So you took mm-hmm. that over to PT. So you started a PT practice 2 years out of school. So were you just naive or a little cocky? I mean, what was going on there?
Both. Okay. Certainly both. I started my career at HSS, my dream job, great hospital, great people, but something was missing for me.
Yeah.
There was a hierarchy that I felt, and all of a sudden I was like, man, was I asleep at the wheel? What did I do wrong? I even thought about leaving the profession, going back to school, and then I met, actually it was a fellow, it was a baseball player who was a PT who had his own practice that really influenced me.
Okay.
And he showed me what he was doing. He had this practice in New Jersey, and I was like, man, I can do that. And so I started this practice while I was still at the hospital, actually. But after I'd work a full day at the hospital, I would then go, we had rented space in this personal training gym. So I started doing that and fell in love with private practice, fell in love with all the different hats you wear. And just fell in love with the idea of having an entrepreneurial part of my brain that's just lit up every day while still being able to do the physical therapy and interacting with patients. And it's sort of like that book, Who Moved My Cheese? Because over those, the last 20 years, the aspects of physical therapy that I've been involved in, whether it was just my own development, treating patients, then it became more of the, how do you develop the business side of the physician relationships? And now it's about developing others. So it's really been changing and shifting and evolving. And that just makes it exciting to this day.
So did you try and start out as a baseball niche practice, or was it an orthopedic general practice?
I started out SPEAR Physical Therapy. SPEAR stood and stands for Sports Performance Enhancement and Rehabilitation.
Okay.
And that was going to be the niche. And then I quickly realized that as cool as that might be, and I still treat a lot of athletes and baseball players, boy, is it rewarding to rehab a grandfather so he can get on the floor and read a story to his grandkids.
Exactly.
And that relationship is so special. So it was fairly quick that I realized it was another one of those who moved my cheese moments. Well, it doesn't have to be just this niche.
Right.
You know, so that was
so how many locations do you have currently?
We've got 15 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, all Manhattan and Brooklyn. We just opened up Brooklyn this year.
And how many years to get to 15?
19 years.
19
years, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're putting in one a year, basically, or close to it?
You know what? It's a different kind of growth pattern, more like a hockey stick, where it was one practice for 7 years, then it was two, and we sort of like started growing at about 50%. Last year to this year, we pretty much doubled. So it's, you know, I think once you get certain things right, and you get really, it's really the right people on board and the right team around you, which is so important. You can't grow. You can't do it by yourself. I think that's the biggest leadership challenge. You cannot do it by yourself.
Yeah.
You run yourself absolutely ragged, and I've done that.
Yeah. You learn that quick, don't you?
Yeah.
And those that don't learn it never get out of that spinning wheel, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So, yeah. So what do you think that PT business owners don't do very well, in your opinion? I mean, if you look at, you know, we always talk about the ones that do well, but what do you think they could do better if they're building PT businesses in private practice?
Sometimes I think PT business owners, as a group, we need to be more transparent with our team. That this is healthcare. This is about, we do it because we love it, but in order to do what we love, it also has to make business sense. The decisions we make have to make business sense. Healthcare on a national level is a business, and that's okay. You know, the word profit is okay. It's not something to focus on. We don't focus on profit. It's a result of the activity. But it's not something to never bring up either. And I think sometimes we're afraid to even say the word revenue or profit, and I think that's where we can probably do better and continue to evolve into, yeah, this is a business. We do great things for people. We make impacts on people's lives. And at the same time, it's okay to really share all that information.
Right, and I think you make a good point. It's, if you focus on just the profits, then you're probably not gonna survive. Mm-hmm. But yet, if you don't focus anything on profits, you're gonna miss some things, and then you could get in trouble. So there's got to be a balance there. But it's not about, you know, making the most money or making the biggest profit. Mm-hmm. It's about how do you build something that people really want to come to, and if you do it well, you know, wouldn't you agree that the profits will follow?
Absolutely. And we try to focus on those steps. You know, getting the right people on the bus, people that love what they do, are passionate about what they do. The profits will come, but...
It comes back to, in one of the previous episodes, we talked about how I think that sometimes people go into private practice for the wrong reasons. And if it's to make money, or if it's, I don't want to work for anybody else, or I want to do my own thing, I want to work my own hours, to me, that's not the right reason to go into private practice. You go into private practice because you see an opportunity where you can create something better than anyone else is doing, or something new and different, and that's why you do it. And then if you do it well, then the profits fall. So
I couldn't agree more.
I got to ask you, just guy from where I come from on the other coast, why Manhattan? I mean, isn't that probably like the most competitive market in the nation? I mean, you got 13 clinics, you know, they're mostly in Manhattan, right?
Yeah, 14 in Manhattan, one in Brooklyn. So you're right, Grand Central Station, within a 20 block radius, there's 120 physical therapy practices.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
what did you see? I mean, did you see an opportunity there that other people weren't seeing, or?
It sort of goes back to this baseball story. I remember my senior year in college, we played against some team from South Carolina, and everybody was talking about their center fielder. And after the game, they were like, wow, did you see this guy? And I didn't. I didn't see him. I didn't see the competition. I didn't watch him. And I said to myself, well, that's weird. How come you didn't even notice it? And it's just always been my approach. I don't focus on competitors. You have to know who they are. And most of the competitors in our area are friendly competitors. But to me, it was just like, hey, I think I can create a great customer experience, a great patient experience that I didn't see happening when I was working back in 1999 at the hospitals.
Yeah.
And I felt like I could compete on that and compete on the patient-therapist relationship. And that is what we've competed on, because you're not getting any referrals coming in automatically. You've got to earn them.
Right.
So I think part of it was just ignorance and just going for it.
So do you think that you do that better than others? Or do you think there's just enough people out there that if you just get more exposure to more people, that there's people out there?
I think we focus on it a lot. I don't know. I never worked for another private practice. I was a PT tech in one, but I never worked in one. So I've always tried to manage based on common sense. And so it's worked. I don't know what anyone else does, but I know we think so deeply about what the patient's experience is when they come in the door. Our architect, even the way we build our spaces out, has that in mind. Our architect was one of our first patients, and he's built out 15 of our locations now. So even the design of the clinics, there's not a single wasted space, and they're just built with that in mind. So I don't know if everybody else is doing the same thing, but it is something we think and talk about constantly.
So building on that theme a little bit, you're in Manhattan, you got a highly competitive area. I saw it again just the other day in the paper. Manhattan's the most expensive place to live in the nation. The cost of doing business has got to be extremely high. Yet reimbursement in New York is sometimes worse than other places in the nation. So how do you take that and make that into a successful practice? Because a lot of people say, gosh, how could you do that? I can't, without the higher reimbursement or lower costs, I can't do this.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we're able to do and affect payment with a payer was just create this really personal relationship. We had a grand opening at our Chelsea office, and from one of these big national insurance companies, I went to a town hall meeting that they had and just made like one connection. And it was hard, you know, to keep in touch. But by the end of it, after a year, I had like five good contacts. Uh-huh. and we had this grand opening. I mean, we were having sports celebrities, we had giveaways, we had sponsors. I mean, it was like planning a wedding. I mean, it was way too big. But I invited all these five people from that insurance company, and they all said yes. And I was like, wow, I can't believe this. They're actually coming to this thing. And it poured that day. Four canceled. One showed up, and boy, did we roll out the red carpet for her. And that was the person that we ended up getting a contract with that made sense. So yeah, it's the toughest place to do business, yeah. But sometimes it's just old-fashioned relationship building.
But you stuck with it. It reminds me, there's a great story, and I don't know if you've heard this before, but the Police, whose Sting was the lead singer of the Police, were coming to the United States for the first time. And so they went to Manhattan, and people had heard about them there, so they played the first show, and it was like, you know, 400 or 500 people, and people loved them. Their second show was in upstate New York, and they walked out on the stage to do the show, and there were five people. And the other two band members said, we're not going to play. This is embarrassing. And Sting said, no, we're going to play. And so he sat down on the stage, and he invited the five people over and introduced themselves, said, this is who we are in the band, and you know, whatever, and we're just going to give you the show we give everybody. And so they just rocked it out for five people. Mm-hmm. Well, as it turned out, three of the five were DJs in that area. And they were so impressed with it that then they just played his music like crazy. And he credits probably those five people had more effect on their success in America than the 300 people that they played the night before in New York City.
So you never know, right?
You never know. So you, like you said, you rolled out the red carpet. Mm-hmm. Let's look at that a little further, because I love how you're talking about having celebrities come. You're talking about people from insurance companies. How do you go up and build a relationship on a cold call?
I think you take advantage of what you can find. So I didn't even do a cold call because that's tough.
Yeah.
But I found out that there was a there was a town hall meeting at the local hospital. Nobody goes to these things.
Yeah.
I went and befriended first the lower level contracting person.
Yeah.
And asked to be introduced to a few other people. So at that event alone, I met three people. And it just went from there. I mean, it wasn't like a slam dunk right away, because nothing is easy, right?
Right.
Nothing is easy. You've got to fight for everything. You know, real estate in New York, you've got to fight for everything. I've got stories of that, too. But it's just really, we talk a lot about grit, determination. Persistence.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's all it was.
So would you say it's your natural way, or you're very comfortable just kind of working a room or going up to people? Or is that a dig deep thing that you got to, you know, it's like the speaker said today at the presentation, sometimes you got to count backwards and go.
Yeah. No, I'm not. It takes a lot of energy for me.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it's just having a willingness to put yourself in uncomfortable situations over and over every day. We used to talk about do something that scares you every day. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's how you grow. So no, it's not easy. It's not easy for anybody, I don't think. I mean, some people maybe, but not me. And it's just consistently putting yourself under some pressure to do things that you're uncomfortable with that may not be fun. But those are the things that lead to results and result in personal growth, professional growth.
Yeah, that's great. So you mentioned it earlier that, you know, surround yourself with good people and you've got a good team. So I would imagine with 15 clinics, you got a pretty good, solid team. So how do you find those people and how do you keep them?
You know, it's like Lincoln found his General Grant.
Yeah.
You know, when you find that person, you've got to recognize it. Have your eyes open. You know, Ryan Kitson in our organization, VP of operations, is, you know, it's him. It's our regional directors that we just created, who are here at PPS conference. It's all our directors, but that's it. Without those guys, it can't be done. So I think it's just recognizing the talent around you.
And how would you describe your leadership style? If you've got this great team around you, they must stay for a reason. So what is your style and what makes them click?
My leadership style is that everyone should really use their strengths, be themselves. Don't try to emulate me. Don't try to emulate Ryan or Dave. Really be who you are, because everyone's got talent, their own talent. I mean, it's not like the biggest tragedy in life is not having enough strengths. It's not that you don't have strengths, it's that you don't use them. So I just really believe in like people being the best versions of themselves. Self-actualization, we talk about it. Leaning into difficult conversations is very important, and I think that's something that, that's to me success or failure, is leaning into those difficult conversations. It sort of leads to the fundamentals. I mean, we had Leif Babin come to us. He's a lieutenant commander of the special forces in the Battle of Ramadi, and he has a book, Extreme Ownership. He came to talk to us. Navy yeah. SEAL, U.S. Navy SEAL,
I've seen that
lieutenant
book.
Commander.
That's a, yeah, it's on my list.
Yeah,
it's a good one. Huh?
And I said to him, "So what you do is life and death. What makes? How do you ensure your team wins?" And I was surprised because I thought it was going to be this really very deep, different kind of approach. And he said, it's the fundamentals.
Yeah.
And so, man, it's just perfect execution of the fundamentals. And that's something that, you know, for us, what are the fundamentals of being a clinical director? To me, it's conversational capacity. It's not avoiding those difficult conversations and letting things fester. You know, so we talk a lot about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Another thing that I know about you is that you're very successful, but yet you have an executive coach.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think you need an executive coach? I'm interested to hear what you...
I'll tell you what, I've had an executive coach or consultants very early on. You know, I didn't have the good fortune of like a family member in the business before, or even like a real mentor in the business that I knew. So I said, you know what? I'm not going to like worry about that. I'm going to pay for it.
Yeah.
And so I really paid, in a sense, to have like a big brother who's done it before.
Yeah.
It's always been money well spent. And even when I felt like, wow, this is a lot, it was, the value was always much greater. So I would say from very, very early on, I've had an executive coach, and I believe in it.
Well, I'm intrigued by that, and for full disclosure, you know, I'm an executive coach, but I'm not your executive coach. But it's just, I'm not trying to pump the business, but I think it's intriguing because I actually got a recent client who's like 3 years out of school. And I said, really? You know what? And she was just, no, I you know, want to do this. I see the value and I want to do it. And I thought, wow, that's some vision. Because, you know, usually you think of, oh, you're only going to do that when you're you know, CEO of this huge company and things are going bad, and so then now you need help. Well, that isn't what's the best use of that person.
Yeah, I mean, coaching, having someone that can say, you know what, try to do this a little different. Boy, does that cut down on the amount of time of doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a sports coach, an executive coach, I mean, that's just a huge time saver of just doing it right.
You ever argue with your executive coach?
I'm not a big arguer. I believe in dynamic tension.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's something our leadership team, we talk about it a lot. You have to be willing to disagree. But for some, it doesn't come out as an argument. It comes back. It comes out more of as a challenge.
A debate.
Mm-hmm. That just happens to be my style.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So tell us, we heard about you being a baseball, professional baseball player and growing up in Brooklyn. Tell us something about Dan that we don't know.
Let's see. That's a good question. I've got three kids.
Yeah.
And
how old are they?
I have two boys, 8 and 10, and I have a little girl who's almost 2.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And is parenting humbling?
Oh, yeah.
I do all this stuff, leadership. I come home, and my wife will say, you know, I don't work for you. Don't talk to me that way. And I'm like, wait, I thought this is the right way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just as the kids get older, it's just always like, how much do you help and push or let them fail? I think it's a similar study.
It is
leadership.
A similar study. It is similar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like some days I get it right, and some days I mess it up. And luckily, you get some forgiveness.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about your kids and embarrass you, but in your business, we've all made mistakes. What's one of your big mistakes that you learned a lot from?
This year, I did not prepare for success. We grew from 8 clinics to 15, and boy, was this a tough year of growing.
Yeah.
I realized that I should have had a CFO before.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons I hired an executive coach last year, because I was running out of bandwidth, and it was always, I'll just hustle a little more.
Yeah.
And that ends at a certain point. And I hit my limit, and I never hit that before in my life. So that was a humbling experience. And prepare for success, because it's going to happen. If you work hard, it's going to happen. But you've got to prepare for it. And I didn't this year. I didn't know. I think it was, if there was one mistake, it was that. Because it's been a painful year, a great year. I mean, I think when you struggle, you have to cherish it, because that's when you grow the most as a person. In that struggle, in that stress, in that bit of chaos is tremendous growth. So I'm happy to have it, and we're coming out of the other side of that.
Yeah.
But prepare for success.
It's a great lesson, because I think what I see happens is that, you talked earlier about goal setting, and I think people that do well in private practice are, they're goal setters, are driven. Mm-hmm. So they get there, and then all of a sudden they're there. And they're overwhelmed. And like you said, sometimes you have to prepare for that as well, as opposed to being totally overwhelmed and then trying to find the solution. So, yeah, it's a good lesson.
It's
a good lesson. So another thing we were talking about earlier was, now you've started doing a podcast. So who's your audience, and what are you trying to do with that?
Yeah, so we just taped/filmed our first podcast 2 days ago.
Cool.
It's called Embrace Your Core, and it's really about what are your core values, and also bringing core exercises. So it is meant for the general public, and the beauty of it, it was one of our physical therapists' ideas. I mean, he had a passion for it,
uh-huh.
and just empowering him to go for it,
yeah.
and it's been great. We just did one, but it was so much fun, and the conversation was terrific. So. It's something I'm really looking forward to developing.
Good. Well, I'm anxious to hear how it goes, because it's those of us that are doing it, you never quite know. Are you reaching people? Are they listening? Is it, whatever? So it's you kind of no man's land there for a while, at least. So, yeah.
We've got the next guest we have is just by chance, Dr. Chris Ahmad, the Yankee physician, is coming to speak to our therapists.
Great.
About baseball injuries. And so now we're able to, when we have these MD lectures, hey, let's get that in on a podcast.
Yeah.
So it's really got a lot of different ways of reaching the public. It's pretty exciting.
So there's a private practice PT out in my state who loves to talk, and he's just kind of an excitable guy. And so he bought ads on a radio show. And then he kind of went and witnessed the thing. And then he said, wait a minute, I should be the radio guy. So he actually has a radio show that he does once a week in the studio, and it's been the greatest referral recruiting thing ever, because physicians love to be on that program. So he's got like four orthopedic surgeons lined up, to talk to him on the radio, and I just thought, what a great idea, because we're all trying to get into to see the docs, and they can never see us. But
right.
You offer them a radio spot? Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I can be that.
Right, and some of these guys have written books that they want to push. You make it about them too.
Yeah.
We've already got a list of two doctors that want to be on it next. So, yeah. And we only had one. So
that's
far,
a great. That's yeah. That's awesome. Good. Well, usually when we end up on these interviews, we ask people like yourselves, what's a pearl of wisdom in relation to leadership? So if you're going to leave our listeners with a pearl of wisdom, what would you say?
I would say that leadership is not easy. Leadership takes a lot of thought and care, and it's difficult, but embrace that difficulty.
Yeah.
Don't shy away from it. It's okay. It doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. It means you're doing something right, because you're being thoughtful about it. So just embrace that, those tough times. Embrace the stress that comes with it, and beautiful things come out of it. So
yeah, it's a great pearl, because I've heard, like you probably have too, that guy, he's a natural leader. He just, well, it's a skill you have to develop and practice and learn and fail and all those kind of things, just like any other skill. And yes, maybe some people are better at it than others, but I think if you focus on it and work hard on it, you can develop your leadership skills.
Mm-hmm.
So,
totally.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I want to thank VGM Advantage for sponsoring this. And please go to the website, vgmadvantage.com, and also orange.coaching.com to see our whole list of video interviews and podcasts. And Dan, I want to thank you for taking the time with us today. I really enjoyed talking with you, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Steve, thank you. It's been an honor.
Thank you.